Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Joining us now is Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey. This is part of a regular check-in with the state's top law enforcer, and there's lots to talk about, from the gas explosions in the Merrimack Valley to politics to her own re-election bid. And Attorney General Healey, thanks so much for coming in.
Great to be with you, Anthony.
So you were in the Merrimack Valley this weekend meeting with residents. What did you see? What did you hear that most concerns you? Let me just ask you to move right. There you go.
I think there are a few things. First of all, what did I see? My job was to go up there as the ratepayer advocate and get briefed by the utilities and the gas company. We wanted to understand what happened and what the plan is going forward. Here's what I saw, though. I saw total devastation. I mean, the needs facing this community, and of course, it's not limited to Lawrence, North Andover, Andover, other areas were impacted. But Lawrence in particular was really, really impacted. And I spent time in the shelters, and these are many people who had very little to begin with. They were worried about things like the food that's spoiled in the refrigerator and not being able to afford to go out and buy groceries. So there's tremendous humanitarian need right now in that community, and my office is going to continue to be there as a resource to those victims and to work with others on providing assistance. The other thing, though, that I was struck by was the outpouring of support. First responders, I was talking to a couple of police officers from Somerville and Methuen who had come on scene. There were officers who came from all over Massachusetts. And that response was really heartening and inspiring, as was the number of volunteers. I met a mother and a daughter from Andover who'd come over to help in one of the shelters. I met so many teachers and staff from the Lawrence Public Schools who were working in the shelters over that weekend. And that really is inspiring. But I think we've got a serious issue here. As we go forward, the pipes need to be fixed. We are looking at a situation, it could be weeks, months, where people in Lawrence may be without an ability to have hot water or an ability to cook.
I mean, we're talking about replacing some 48 miles of aging gas pipes, right?
That's a ton of work. And here's what I've said. The companies need to do everything they can to get as many experienced gas workers on site to fix this and to fix it in a safe manner. It can't be done too quickly in a way that's not safe. It's got to be done expeditiously but thoroughly. And you need more workers. And that's why I've said if they need to bring back workers, including some of those who've been locked out, now's the time to do it because, you know, people cannot afford to wait. Winter is coming. Obviously, there's going to be a ton of litigation, a ton of claims, a lot to sort out. We as an office will be there protecting consumers, protecting ratepayers. The one thing I don't want to see is any effort by the gas companies to pass on the bill to ratepayers or residents who are already burdened by this.
So I wanted to ask you about that. So how does your office sort of make that happen? I mean, how can the state or your office ensure that the cost of upgrading 48 miles of pipeline doesn't get passed on to the consumer?
Well, that's something statutorily we cover. We are the ratepayer advocate for the state. So our job is to be there to protect ratepayers and to make sure they're not unfairly charged. We do that regularly. In fact, we had an open case, a rate case against Columbia Gas going at this time. And what we'll be looking to do is to make sure that there is a full accounting of expenses and a full accounting of what it's going to cost to do these repairs. And we want to make sure that those costs are not passed on to ratepayers. Those costs should be borne, frankly, by the company and its shareholders. It's as simple as that, as well as the parent company.
Now, when you mentioned that you had an ongoing case, this was Columbia Gas was in the process of raising rates, right? $33 million, a number they had settled on after negotiating with your office, right?
Right. Originally, they came in much higher. That's what happens. Yeah. The utilities, when they want to raise rates, they have to go before the State Department of Public Utilities. Yeah. We're the party. The AG's office comes in representing you and me, the ratepayers. And we fought the proposed rate increase and ultimately settled at a much lower rate of increase. At this point, that whole settlement has been shelved and has been pulled back. As it should be, because there's a much larger and more serious issue on our hands right now that's going to require a serious look. Also, a thorough investigation by state and federal authorities. We need to get to the bottom of what happened to make sure that the right things are done to fix the system, and most importantly, to take care of residents in the interim. And as I say, there are a lot of people who have been affected, who it looks like will continue continue to suffer and be affected over what may be several weeks, if not months. The state needs to be there for them.
So this was a catastrophe that afflicted three communities in Massachusetts. But of course, you know, when something like that happens, I think residents all over the state are correct to kind of wonder, could this happen here? Could this happen in my community? I mean, should the state, I don't know, survey all natural gas companies and pipes and hardware and infrastructure across the state?
Well, I think that's something that the Department of Public Utilities should make sure is happening right now as we speak. I think people are understandably concerned about, you know, what's happening beneath the surface in their own communities and what their risks are. And certainly now is an important time to make sure that those inspections are done and the right steps be taken and the right protocols and practices are in place across the board at all these companies.
I want to move on to a little bit of politics and sort of recent events, starting with Ayanna Pressley and her surprise victory for the Democratic in the Democratic primary. As we know and as we've reported widely, handily beat incumbent Mike Capuano. And she did it despite the fact that much of the Democratic establishment backed Capuano, former Governor Deval Patrick, Mayor Marty Walsh, Congressman Joe Kennedy, former Congressman Barney Frank, even the civil rights icon John Lewis, to name just a few. You were an exception. You backed her from the start. What did you see in her candidacy that all of those other fellow Democrats of yours didn't see?
I know Ayanna Pressley. I have worked with Ayanna Pressley for over 10 years now on so many different issues. I know how much she is going to bring to the 7th and, more importantly, to Washington, D.C., what she's going to stand for, who she's going to fight for. And also I know Ayanna Pressley's ability to energize and mobilize and get stuff done. When I heard that she was facing the establishment against her, frankly, I was reminded a little bit of my own race. I faced a similar scenario years ago when I ran as a first-time candidate for attorney general. Mm-hmm. And Ayanna Pressley was one of the few who stood out and supported me when the governor and the mayor supported my opponent. And, you know, I appreciated her courage then. More importantly, though, I appreciate her courage and her willingness to speak out, give a voice to those who are vulnerable, and to speak to issues that I think are really resonating with people in our community. And I think the illustration she used of the number one bus
going
said it
Harvard
all.
Going from Harvard Square to
right?
Dudley Square
and
to
I
Oxford,
think,
yeah.
You know, no matter where you live, and I'm a Boston resident, you get that, right? You see, like, the disparity there. And you know, I think we struggle with, well, why is this so? And what do we need to do? And Ayanna really spoke to that. You know, in campaigning with her, one of the things that I was really excited about, Anthony, was the fact that so many people were turning out who hadn't been involved in a political campaign before. That's also something that I'm seeing across this state and across this country. It's really good for democracy. It's really good for the Democratic Party. The number of people, this has been a silver lining, frankly, since November 2016. The number of people who are now running for office or involved in political campaigns or stepping up to volunteer, that's a really wonderful and inspiring thing, and that gives me tremendous hope and optimism about what's possible for this country.
Do you think the establishment Democrats, including all those establishment Democrats in this state, who some of whom I listed, who didn't support her candidacy, I mean, is there a message that they need to take away and really take to heart here?
I leave that to all of us individually and to them individually. What I do think is important, though, is that all of us in politics and who are privileged to serve in office never forget it's the people we serve. You know, those are the interests and the only interests that we're beholden to, the interests of our constituents. And, you know, I think that's why people are so fed up with D.C. right now. You know, it's why I support the repeal of Citizens United. It's why we've got to get rid of money in politics and the special interests that seem to control the deck entirely. And I think that what you've seen across this country in election after election recently, and hopefully we're going to see a boatload more of it come November, is the masses coming forward and saying enough is enough, and we're going to take this country back, we're going to take democracy back. And that's what this is about, and I think that's why this time is particularly exciting.
I want to talk to you a little bit about your many legal actions, lawsuits against the Trump administration. I've talked to you about this in the past, but just to sort of bring listeners up to date, and actually I think my numbers might be a little bit out of date, but if I have this right, you have signed on to legal challenges against the Trump administration at least something like 26 times, maybe more, and we're talking about among the actions, challenging Trump's travel ban, his effort to rescind DACA, you sued to protect parts of the Affordable Care Act, to multiple times the Department of Education for failing to protect student lenders from fraud. You've sued or joined other lawsuits against former EPA Chief Scott Pruitt something like 9 times. And the legal battle goes on and on and on. Are you sort of comfortable with this reputation that you've earned? It was described this way, that you're part of the shock troops of the Trump resistance, leading the shock troops of the Trump resistance.
Well, I think what we're trying to do is protect the interests of the residents and the businesses in our state. And that's what I'm trying to do with these litigations. You know, it's important to the people of Massachusetts that we have access to health care, that we support a growing clean energy economy and investments made here that are threatened by the actions that Trump and EPA have taken. It's important to Massachusetts residents that we protect student borrowers and try to keep them safe from predatory lenders and predatory for-profit schools that are out there. Last week, my office won big against Betsy DeVos once again, where we had to go to court to get a judge to order her to not put in place a plan she had to allow those predatory actors back into the marketplace. So, you know, for me, all these lawsuits are about, of course, taking on actions that Donald Trump and his team does that are illegal and unconstitutional, but that harm in real ways folks in Massachusetts. And I think, you know, so far we've had a lot of success in the courts. I hope the day comes, Anthony, where, you know, they stop doing things that are stupid and illegal and harmful, you know. But until then, we're going to keep suing, and we're going to keep stopping them from doing these things while we move ahead with a really robust agenda. You know, I've been spending the last few months visiting classrooms of middle schools all around the state, launching my substance use prevention program, Project Here, which is really directed at combating so much of what we've seen revealed through the opioid crisis. I've got a new initiative on as well to address issues of violence, particularly among young people, on teen dating violence and the like. We're really pushing hard for taxpayers in Massachusetts. I'm proud of the work that our office did last year alone. You know, we generate revenue for the state. My office brought back over $800 million for the state and taxpayers last year.
So the point is, you're doing a lot more, obviously, than just suing the Trump administration.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, there are those, she's suing Trump all the time. What's that about? And it's costing us money. First of all, you know, I haven't gotten a single dime more to do this work. This is the work of the office that's necessary to protect Massachusetts interests and our industries. And, you know, I'm grateful to my team in the office because they're working hard on a lot of fronts these days.
Well, let me sort of continue this line of questioning in the context of, you're facing a reelection challenge from Republican Jay McMahon. He's an attorney from Cape Cod. And as you know, he makes the case that all of these suits, what he calls them, politically motivated rather than serving the interests of the people of Massachusetts. And we had him in here a few weeks ago. Here's a little bit of what he said, which you've obviously heard before, but here it is.
Those are the only issues she pays attention to. She doesn't do anything at all about public safety. And when you talk, and you were asking us a little while ago about the civil suits that she's been filing against the Trump administration, you only have to look at the first one to see that it's all just a matter of her own political activism. And it is against our public safety interests.
So the first suit he was referring to, obviously, was the suit challenging the travel ban, which eventually was upheld by the Supreme Court. But respond to Jay McMahon's
point
there.
You know, I have yet to meet Mr. McMahon. I don't know much about my opponent or his record. I do know something about law enforcement. And as a member of law enforcement and the chief law enforcement officer of the state, I'm very proud of our record. You know, one of the things that we did and that we noticed, particularly with what was happening in immigrant communities and things like the travel ban, it was us working with law enforcement that said we need to make sure that we maintain the trust between law enforcement and the communities that we serve. We know who are people out there who are dangerous to our community, and we wanted the federal government to stay out of our way. Give us more resources, you know, to support the men and women who serve, but don't tell us how to do our job. You know, I'm proud to have the endorsement of police officers in this race. I'm proud of the work that I've done with the Massachusetts Police Chiefs Association. I was just with them the other day for their annual conference. So, you know, I'm a big supporter of law enforcement and the work that our first responders do. And, you know, I also have a bigger job in the sense that, you know, I have to look after things like our healthcare institutions. You know, that's part of the job of the Attorney General. So, you know, while people may question why I'm suing the president, well, you know, when he threatens to sabotage the ACA or cut off Medicaid funds to our state, I have to sue. Why? You know, because otherwise our healthcare markets will be destabilized and health insurance plans will be undermined and fundamentally, people are going to lose access to care. That's unacceptable in the state that pioneered universal access to health care. So, you know, there's just it's as Attorney General, you know, we call ourselves the people's lawyer. You really cover a lot of territory and a lot of ground out there. And what I've said is I've offered debates with my opponent. I welcome him to the race. I welcome those debates, and I look forward to talking through the issues and certainly our record.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, I think we're going to be doing a debate here at WBUR between you,
you
and Mr.
October
McMahon.
October 24th,
yeah.
I think.
So, yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah.
But so let's put it, and we'll obviously get into this more deeply when you two are seated in here, but putting aside his claims that these suits against the Trump administration are politically motivated, you've responded to that. Is it fair to say that you'd rather be focused on state issues rather than having to defend the state against the federal government?
See, I don't separate them because anytime there's a federal action, an executive order that has an impact on a Massachusetts college or university, which the travel ban did, by the way, because literally we had professors and students who were blocked from coming here, or a decision that, you know, like the DeVos decision to let predatory players back into the student lending space, having spent a lot of time going after people who cheated thousands of Massachusetts students here, you know, that's something that is tied to Massachusetts interests. So, you know, that's what that work is about. I wish, I'll tell you this, I wish we had a partner at the federal level. We used to, both through previous Republican and, you know, Democratic administrations. We found ways to work together on a number of fronts. But what's happened here, and what is so troubling, Anthony, is that as you look across federal agencies, no one's home. No one is there.
What do you mean by that, no one's home? I mean,
no one's home to do their job at the FCC, at the FTC, at the CFPB, anywhere in DOJ. You walk the halls of DOJ, you know, a lot of people have left, and they're not replacing them to enforce laws that are there to protect workers from abuse or consumers or seniors from fraud or students from getting ripped off or to stand up for civil rights. So what that has meant is that all that work has fallen on states and particularly state AGs to do. So, you know, I would hope we'd get to a point, particularly with a turn in elections, that would change. But until then, we've got to be there to be the bulwark to both enforce laws that are there to protect people in, frankly, what has been a complete abdication of responsibility by the federal government.
Let me ask you about another specific issue that you're dealing with. Your suit against ExxonMobil. The Supreme Judicial Court ruled that your investigation into whether Exxon hid knowledge of climate change could go ahead. Exxon wants to take this to the Supreme Court and argues that you don't have the jurisdiction, that it's unconstitutional because Exxon doesn't have a significant enough connection to Massachusetts. What's the response to that claim by Exxon?
Well, I think that's pretty laughable because as your listeners are out there on the road right now, I bet within the next 5 miles they're going to come across an ExxonMobil station somewhere. So, I mean, it's laughable that Exxon would take the position they don't do business in Massachusetts. More importantly, a court has already rejected that claim. Here's something, though, I want to be clear about. You know, a lot of people say, Exxon, you sued Exxon. Well, you know what? I didn't sue Exxon. Exxon sued me. What happened is information came to light that Exxon may have lied to consumers and investors about the impact on fossil fuels was having on the environment back in the 70s and the 80s. Mm-hmm. We sent subpoenas to Exxon asking them for information, straight up normal work of our office. Instead of responding, they sued me. in Texas, in New York, and in Massachusetts. We got all those cases dismissed. They want to continue to press it in the Supreme Court. Good luck to them. I'm confident that we'll be able to continue with our investigation. And it's an important investigation. It's important that we get answers. And we're just going to stay the course here.
We literally have sort of 10 seconds left in this interview, but what is the most important question that you need an answer to from Exxon?
What happened? Yeah. Give us the documents, let us do our work, and stop playing games and stonewalling.
All right. Well, that's Attorney General Maura Healey. She's going to be back on October. You have the date. I don't have it in my head.
I think it's the 24th. All right, whatever
well,
it is, I look forward
we
to
haven't
being here and
I'm told by my
questions.
Producers we have not confirmed it yet, but it is coming up. She's going to be back on Radio Boston soon with her Republican opponent, Jay McMahon. Maura Healey, thank you so much for coming today. We appreciate it.
Great to be with you.
Finally today, the Red Sox have another chance tonight in New York to clinch the American League Eastern Championship. They just need to beat the Yankees, and they can raise another banner. A banner, by the way, that went missing for a couple of days this week. Then a guy named Louis Yacuzzi of Malden revealed that he had the banner. He told the Boston Globe that he found it, like you do, on McGrath Highway in Somerville. And if you missed it, check out the video that the Globe made of Yacuzzi and his buddy James Amaral. It's like a hostage video in which the two guys are offering to return the banner to the Red Sox if the team, you know, does the right thing.
We want to give it back to them because it belongs to them and it doesn't belong to us.
Yep.
But in reciprocation, we would like, you know, maybe to go to a nice playoff game or we're looking for something. We just don't want to hand it over to them.
We're hoping they do the right thing. Yep. You know, we did the right thing. We could have kept it. We could have put it on eBay. We could, you know, we got connections where we could have reached out to other sources.
Yeah. You know, it's a very nice banner. It'd be a shame to see something bad happen to it. Well, apparently, it didn't work out the way Louis Yacuzzi wanted and James Amaral had hoped. Yesterday, the Red Sox confirmed they got the banner back. They didn't give anything to the people who returned it. So now it's back. It's all up to the Red Sox. All they need to do tonight is beat the Yankees. So that's it. That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.